Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine food Friday, October 27th. I'm Ray Graff. Today marks the return of cookbook authors Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough, and they're here with their 30th book. Their 30th book! It's zooming up the charts. All-time favorite sheet cakes and slab pies. Easy to make, easy to serve. Yeah, this is good. It's a Friday. We have slab pies and we have sheet cakes. So let's discuss cakes and pies and such. Hey, have a question about crust, filling, icing? Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You may also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number on this Food Friday, 800-348-2551. Bruce and Mark, cakes and pies, how can you lose? Coming up. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today, they are Food Friday Hall of Famers in their own right. We don't have actually a Hall of Fame yet, but we will have induction ceremonies at some point. Rocco DeFazio has insisted that I do this. Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough are here. They have published 30 cookbooks in 16 years. That's more than 12,000 original recipes tested and written, and millions of hours at the table, billions of hours on the cross trainer. They've written the best-selling Great Big Pressure Cookbook, the Great American Slow Cooker Book, the Turbo Blender Desert Revolution. Oh, it's Dessert Revolution. Today they're here with their latest work, All-Time Favorite Sheet Cakes and Slab Pies. Bruce and Mark, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Ray.
Hi, Ray.
So nice to have you guys here. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. This new book, it's a winner.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
The
thank
pictures you. Alone. All-time sheet cakes, all-time favorite sheet cakes and slab pies. I open it up to the brandy date and pecan pie. Pretty good.
Except you said it.
I know. Pecan. I just do that to irritate the Southerner.
You offend my Southern heart.
Pecan. But some really great recipes in here. And you guys were already on QVC.
We were rocking this 3 weeks ago. QVC likes an exclusive. The book went on sale 2 days ago.
Yep.
And QVC likes to have it about 3 weeks in advance.
Can you gauge the popularity of your books based on how you do early?
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, sure. And QVC is a big bump in that. I mean, that's a great help.
It's a nice, it's a nice way to go on and all of a sudden, you know, move thousands of units in minutes. It's really
nice.
Amazing.
And I have to say that I think that on the air we actually got some crazy moments from the host, didn't we?
Like what?
Well, Dave Venable is the host, and he's very nice. He's a really nice guy.
He had the peanut butter cake with the bacon buttercream.
Oh my gosh, really?
Really?
And where is that now?
I had to hold him up.
Really?
I had to support him as he ate.
I brought you a New England cranberry pie.
And it's very good, but it has no bacon frosting on it.
No. This has got walnuts and cranberries and butter. And this is a very simple one to make.
How'd you make it?
Well, you start with melted butter, so you don't even have to cream butter and sugar. So you take a big, giant bowl of melted butter.
Throw it in the microwave.
You throw it in the microwave, then it melts. And into that, you mix in flour and sugar and vanilla and baking powder, walnuts and cranberries. And then you slap that into your sheet pan and bake it for only 30 minutes.
That's what we have to say. Everything in this book is made in a sheet pan. And we're talking a big sheet pan, 18 by 13. That's a half hotel sheet pan.
But not high. In other words, when you said sheet cakes, I thought, okay...
Not five inches high.
You were thinking what Tina Fey ate on Saturday Night Live when she went sheet caking.
Not a 9 by 13 inch baking dish, but an 18 by 13 inch baking.
And so baking time must be fairly short.
Because it's so flat. But the nice thing about it, I know some people don't have these really large baking pans.
Yeah.
So the great thing is you can either divide the batter up from every single recipe into 2 9 by 13s, or you could just make half. In a 9 by 13.
Right.
How many of these did you make when you were writing this book?
Well, I made all of them, of course. I created them. They're in our team. I'm the chef and Mark's the writer. So together we sit down and come up with ideas for what these should be. And then I have to go into the kitchen and create them.
I have to say I've wanted to write this book. I wanted us to write this book for several years, but no publisher would touch it.
Really?
I grew up with sheet cakes. I grew up in the South. And, you know, our family reunion was held on, of course, the hottest day of the year, the first weekend in August, on a concrete slab at a state park lake, you know, where just where it's 100,000 degrees, just where you want the deviled egg sitting all day long.
There is no deviled egg sheet cake.
All the ladies would come, all my aunts and cousins would come with these giant sheet cakes. And they showed up at every church supper, every office potluck I was ever a part of in the South.
Was it a competitive thing? Did Betty Lou get into throwdown with Aunt Sarah?
It's always competitive in the South about cooking. Are you kidding? It's always competitive.
See, up here in the Northeast, you have the family reunions. You get the lime Jello rings.
Mm. Well, then you have to decide, is there mayonnaise in it or Cool Whip? Because if there's mayonnaise, it's a salad and served with dinner. If it's Cool Whip, it's dessert and served after dinner.
Okay, that's book 31, all right? Just saying.
This boy's been around the South a bit too much over here.
30 cookbooks, and this is the 30th, and it's out. It's out now,
right? It is on sale now.
All-time favorite sheet cakes and slab pies, Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough are here, and let's go to the phones at 800-348-2551. Mary in Starkesboro, Vermont, you're on.
Hello, Ray. Thank you. Hello, Bruce and Mark. Right now, I'm making a carrot cake. The carrot cake is done, and I'm going to put on a cream cheese frosting. And I am trying to cut way back on sugar, if to use it at all. In the cake, I cut back to a third sugar and two-thirds maple syrup. I'm wondering, on the cream cheese frosting, if I can leave out the confectionery sugar and try cream cheese, butter, and maple syrup.
Well, what's going to happen is you're going to have a very wet frosting because you're asking if you could change out a powder and put in a liquid. And although sugar technically in baking is a liquid, because as soon as it meets other things, it melts and goes back to its liquid form, the powdered sugar in frostings make it thick and give it its spreadable texture. So you can add some maple syrup for flavor, but to be honest, by adding that liquid, you're going to have to compensate by adding even more powdered sugar.
Couldn't you reduce the maple syrup?
Well, what I'm hearing is that there's no maple syrup in her recipe at all. She just wants to use it instead of powdered sugar. And the answer to that is you cannot just substitute maple syrup for powdered sugar.
But she might be able to use a small amount of maple syrup.
For flavor, sure.
In it.
Right. And here's a question.
Okay.
What about using maple sugar? What is different between confectionery sugar and pure maple sugar?
Well, let me say first off that confectioner's sugar has cornstarch in it. And that cornstarch actually helps bind up some of the liquid that's not going to happen in maple sugar.
So what I would suggest, if you want to do that, maple sugar is also going to be very coarse, and it's going to leave your frosting crunchy. So if you have like a Vitamix or another version of a turbo blender, you could put the maple sugar in there and turn it on and really powderize it so that maple sugar becomes the texture of powdered sugar. And then just put a teaspoon of cornstarch in as well, and then you might be able to use that, and that'll give you the maple flavor and a spreadable frosting.
Thanks so much.
You're
Sounds
welcome.
Like it'll be interesting.
Good luck, Mary. Thanks a lot. And let's go on over to Margo in Saratoga Springs. Margo, you're on. Oh, you got to turn your radio down a wee bit there, Margo, okay? Oh, boy. All right, hang on. We'll wait for Margo to get it's about a 10-second wait here. Hello, Margo. Oh, for Pete's sake. All right, Margo, call us back. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551.
That was very spooky because I like heard myself in the background.
You sound good, though, right?
Yeah, right.
We were trying
to
wait for Margo to catch up.
Yeah, that's it. And there's a little delay. We have a delay just in case Bruce swears. And then we also have, I think, about a 10-second.
You got the wrong one on that.
Oh, really? You're the swearer?
Me?
Yeah.
Me? Well, I'm sorry, but my veins are filled with the buttermilk of human kindness, really. I'm serious.
That's nice. Save that one for book 31. Actually, there's probably about 15 seconds between the time it leaves this room and then it goes through the digital processing and everything. So Margo would have been a while, but she'll call us back at 800-348-2551. How'd the Turbo Blender Dessert Revolution book go? That was the last time you were here.
I loved the idea of a Turbo Blender Desert Revolution.
Yeah.
That was really a great idea. I'm wondering how like ISIS would use like the turbo blenders.
Well, you know what? Can we go back to talking about cookbooks? So let's not go there.
This is public radio, so we talk politics a lot.
Yeah. The turbo blender dessert revolution book is continuing to be great. And it is this book in which we make all these crazy desserts and other things inside of a Vitamix with no other pot on the stove most of the time. But this all-time favorite sheet cakes and slab pies is really close to my heart. And I don't think a lot of people up north know what a slab pie is.
No, we get that all the time. People are like, I get no a sheet idea. Cake, but what's a slab pie?
We talked in the newsroom the better part of the day saying, well, what the hell is a slab pie?
Right.
Well, it's a pie made in that same large sheet pan that you make the sheet cake in. So basically, you've got to get a pie crust that's 18 by 13. So rather than rolling out your 9 or 10-inch circle, you're going to roll out your 20-inch by 14-inch rectangle and put that in the bottom. Then you're going to fill it just like you would any other pie, either with a fruit filling like apples and sugar and tapioca or blueberries or a coconut custard filling or a chess pie filling. And then you're going to...
There's a great Thanksgiving one in there, right? That's a pumpkin pie with a ginger crumble top. And it's, you know, you're obviously making this for crowds.
Because each one of these can feed anywhere from 20 to 30 people.
So that's really the advantage. Otherwise, there's no advantage. You make a regular pie, right?
Well, if you're going to someone's house for the holidays and you're asked to bring pie, you'll probably bring 3 or 4.
Right.
So this way you can bring one.
Well, we always say it serves what? I always say vaguely 18 to 24 or one in divorce proceedings. I mean, come on.
That's very nice.
It's just one person, you know, and a fork.
You brought your A material today.
I did.
Let's take a break. Leave them laughing. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Sheet cakes, slab pies. Bruce and Mark, your calls coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Big Y, family-owned and operated with Big Y Express stations in Lee and Pittsfield. Celebrating more than 80 years of serving communities throughout New England, BigY.com. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, Careers in Transition, LLC.com. Blue Heron Restaurant and Catering, offering full-service catering at the restaurant in Sunderland and throughout western Massachusetts, blueherondining.com/catering. Big Elm Brewing, tap room open Thursday through Saturdays, noon to 6 p.m., crafting ales and lagers in Sheffield, Massachusetts since 2012, bigelmbeer.com. And Silver Bay YMCA Conference and Family Retreat Center on Lake George, New York, open to all for family reunions, conferences, and personal retreats, silverbay.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC Food Friday. Ray Graff here with you at 800-348-2551. We are joined today by Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough, who have a new book out, their 30th. It's called All-Time Favorite Sheet Cakes and Slab Pies, and they brought a beautiful cranberry thing.
A New England cranberry walnut pie.
Very nice.
Even though it has no pie crust and looks like a cake.
It's really a take on a Nantucket cranberry pie. That's what it is, turned into sheet cake slab pie form.
And how long again did you bake this?
This baked 30 minutes.
That's very good.
Yeah.
And it's perfect.
And it only takes about 5 minutes to mix it up because you use melted butter and you just mix everything in the bowl.
And it's nice and light. It's really good.
Despite the fact that there is almost 3 sticks of butter in it, it's very light.
I'll tell you, Colleen O'Connell in the front office, she's kind of a tough critic. And she said it was delicious.
Oh.
Excellent. Thank you, Colleen.
Well, that's nice.
All right. This one came in via email and then back to the phones we go. This is from Polly, who says, I have an embarrassment of riches, a glut of pawpaws. That is. Oh, I saw a recipe for a pawpaw pie, basically a pumpkin pie with pawpaws instead of the pumpkin.
Yep.
The recipe yielded a very skimpy pie, however, so I was wondering how to scale up the custard filling. Is there a standard ratio of cream to eggs to pulp that will result in a nice, firm, yet not rubbery filling?
Oh, gosh. You know what? Now, here's the truth. I have lived up north for 35 years, and I can barely remember pawpaw pie.
What is a pawpaw?
It's a fruit that's ripening right now. It's very common across the South. Pawpaw pie is a big thing. Believe it or not, I just recently saw a bar making pawpaw cocktails. Crazy.
Huh.
But anyway, I don't actually know the ratios, but as I recall, it's wet, and you have to work it down somehow. But I have to say, I'm speaking out of the top of my head.
The pawpaw is wet. It's wetter than a pumpkin puree.
Yeah,
so if you follow a standard pumpkin pie or sweet potato pie recipe, it'll tell you there how much like canned pumpkin to milk to or cream to eggs. Since pawpaw is wetter, you probably want to decrease your liquid, your milk, by maybe 20% and then add an extra egg, and that will give you a little bit. And you can always also...
But won't the eggs make it more rubbery?
No, they'll make it more custardy.
Okay.
What will make it rubbery is if you try to add cornstarch or flour to make it hold together.
Okay,
but
right.
Eggs will give it a light custard quality.
All right, Polly. Well, there you go. Our number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. The new book is Sheet Cakes and Slab Pies. And for some reason, you open this book and it goes right to the chocolate section.
Well, of course.
Yeah, of course.
It's designed that way.
All right. So, Bruce, you did most of the experimenting. I assume, Mark, that you tasted a lot of these.
I tasted all of them.
What was your favorite?
Oh, my gosh. Well, there is this one that it's not – at the end of the book – I'm stumbling. I like it so much. At the end of the book, there's a whole section of curiosities, things that aren't really slab pies or sheet cakes.
Uh-oh. It's like a freak show.
Yeah, kind of. And they include a giant Pop-Tart the size of that whole sheet pan.
Okay.
And other things. But there's this one – it sounds fancy, but there's this Dacquoise –
recipe. Ooh, it's getting real fancy.
It is. Yeah. I know, Dacquoise. It's a crunchy, crunchy meringue cake layer.
Uh-huh.
So you make a Dacquoise in the whole pan, crunchy with nuts in it and egg white. So it's really crunchy. And then you top it with a chocolate buttercream.
Ooh.
And it is so fine.
Could you work some pawpaws into that?
I doubt it. It is such a fine thing. Ugh.
All right. Let's go back to the phones, 800-348-2551. And, you know, Margot was on the phone earlier, and she had her radio on, and then she left the room. And now she's back. Hi, Margot. You're on. Or maybe she's not back. Oh, Margot, you're killing me. You're killing me.
Hey,
hello,
Margo.
All right, Margot's not there again. Margot's batting a thousand. She should be on the Mets, actually.
Uh-oh.
Catherine and Troy, you're on. Catherine.
Hi there.
Hi.
So I was really interested in if you'd be willing to talk a little bit about cookbook writing. I'm a food writer. And 30 cookbooks is a lot.
Yeah.
How did you get started? How do you keep it going? How do you keep, you know, a market out there for 30 cookbooks, 31?
Let me just say the quick 2-second history is that this is a second career for both of us.
Right.
And this is Bruce, and I've been to chef school, and I did nothing with that education when I first had it. And I went into advertising. I was a creative director for 20 years and then worked my way back into food. And Mark taught English at university in Texas. So when we got together, I was into the food. He was doing some food writing, restaurant reviewing, and we just kind of fell into this together as writing cookbooks.
We fell a bit back into it, but I have to say that, you know, in terms of how do you get into the cookbook career anymore, if since I'm going to give really honest, real-world advice.
Yeah, just don't swear.
I won't. Anymore, what you have to do, honestly, is you have to have a gigantic social media presence. That is it. Listen, 30 cookbooks in, I still write proposals for publishers. I still have to write up a business plan for every book that we publish. And in that business plan, I still have to put the number of Twitter followers we have, the number of Facebook followers, our Instagram interaction rate.
Okay, but 16 years ago, that was not the case.
No, it wasn't.
No, 16 years ago, it was a different way to get into
the
business.
And before the internet existed, it was much easier to get into the business. If you had a great idea, that's all it took.
That's
but
right.
Because of the internet, now it takes more than just the idea. It takes you as a personality and who you are in the world.
Sorry. And publishing has shrunk and shrunk.
Yes.
I mean, and the number of publishers, they have consolidated. There's now just, what, four big New York
houses?
It's
like the airlines. They all laid each other up.
Yeah, but and yet there are 8 million new cookbooks a year. So how does one differentiate oneself?
Well, many of those people, many of the big cookbooks published right now are by chefs. They have restaurants. A publisher will publish that book because there's guaranteed sales through the restaurant at your customers at the restaurant. If you don't have a restaurant and you're not that kind of person, then you actually have to work on your social media feed. I know this sounds boring,
yeah,
as it can be, but it's absolutely the truth of the matter anymore.
And then in terms of inspiration of recipes, how to keep that going, that's just an ongoing process that anyone in any creative and artistic field has. We travel, we try and expose ourselves to as many different new restaurants and chefs and foods and markets as we can just to keep our palates expanded.
But believe me, the question of how to keep creativity alive is the dominant question.
Absolutely.
in our work,
in
our relationship.
In any endeavor this nature. And I assume that you have 30 books. How many ideas hit the cutting room floor before?
Many. They hit the cutting room floor in our house when we sit in the office talking about what to do. Our agent she listens to our ideas and she kills a lot of them because she doesn't like them.
I just spent a month working on a big proposal for a cookbook, and I couldn't get it past my agent, agent.
I mean,
so
Mark
our
and
agent
I,
killed
yeah,
it.
Mark and I had an idea. We spent a month, presented it to our agent, and she said no.
Well, I mean, the Sheet Cakes and Slab Pies book,
it was instant. As soon as we said it,
it was turned down initially.
By publishers. Our agent loved the idea. We had a number of publishers who just didn't get it. And then this woman, our editor, BJ, at St. Martin's Press, she got it. She was like, yeah, that makes perfect sense to me.
Yep. All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Tell you what, gentlemen, let's spin the wheel one more time and see if Margo's around. Margo, are you there?
Oh, I thank you so much for taking my call. Thank you. I hope I've added a little humor to people's lives.
Praise God. You're on the air.
Wacky cake or crazy cake? Do you know what it is?
I don't know what it is. Mark, do you know what
that
is?
It's a cake that's made without no eggs, but it has vinegar in it.
Okay. Oh. There's a recipe like that in one of our books. In the Ultimate Cookbook, we have a chocolate loaf cake, and there are no eggs in it, but there is some vinegar in it. But I never knew that was called a wacky or a crazy cake.
Well, go ahead, Margo, explain.
You put all your dry ingredients into an 8-inch pan, and then you stir it with a fork, and you put three holes. In one hole, you put a teaspoon of vanilla and a tablespoon of vinegar and a third of a cup of oil. And that's it. You stir it up and you bake it. And it's the most delicious cake for people who can't have eggs.
Or can't have dairy.
And I think it was something that came out of World War II. When things were rationed.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Interesting. Probably, yeah.
It was a recipe I got when I was a young bride, and it was a family favorite.
Fascinating.
Thank you for sharing that, Margo, and we really appreciate you making it to the airwaves here. 800-348-2551 is the number, 800-348-2551. We have Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough here, the new book, his all-time favorite Sheet Cakes and Slab Pies. Another one that my grandmother always said came out of rationing was the mayonnaise chocolate cake.
Right. Yeah, I grew up with it.
That was delicious.
Well, you're just adding eggs and fat, right?
Yeah.
And it's all mayonnaise. Think about what is mayonnaise? It's oil and eggs. So what goes into a good cake? Oil and eggs. You're just putting them in a different form.
Before we go to the next call, just give me an idea of the worst idea that you ever had that made it to a
for
book.
For any book?
Any book.
My favorite was for our very first book, The Ultimate Ice Cream Book, which 17, 18 years later is still like the best-selling ice cream I got.
Really?
And one of the recipes, we were desperately trying to do a garlic ice cream. No matter how many times I tried it, it just kept tasting like frozen Alfredo sauce.
Oh, delicious.
So we killed it.
Well, I think that if you go to the Garlic Fest, you'll probably find that.
Absolutely. And there are people who make garlic ice cream. We just couldn't get ours to work.
Did we keep the lavender ice cream in that book?
Yeah.
We did.
We've had that commercially with ice cream people. Yeah. And if you do it right, you don't overdo the lavender. It can be good.
But if you do overdo it, it's like not... it's like kissing your grandma. It's just...
Well, there you go. And thanks for conjuring that image up. Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough here, 800-348-2551. Jim and Adams, Mass. Jim, you're on.
Yay, Ray.
Hey.
Hi. My mother's cousin, he ran his own bakery shop in the town of Adams for a great number of years.
Yeah.
And he pursued what he termed the perfect apple pie, the holy grail of apple pies, where it would be a crust and apples. There would be no sugar, no cinnamon. I think he may have put a few dabs of butter in there, but there was no sweetening, no spices.
Wow.
He was always seeking to find the right type of apple or mix of apples to get that perfect apple pie that would taste just mouthwateringly good without any sugar or cinnamon in it.
Wow.
He must have had the world's sweetest apples, and they must not have been too juicy because typically you mix a little flour or tapioca in to absorb the extra liquid. So he probably had very sweet and very dry apples, and that would be fascinating to try.
Yeah, but he also, we would go up on Mount Greylock when these bushes were around. They used to have wild blueberries, not the domesticated, the wild ones with the real intense flavor, high bush blueberries. And they're no longer there. The State Department of Conservation and Recreation thought they would make better conditions for the berries to grow up there. And they burned over the whole area, destroyed all the high bush blueberries. There were only low bush left. But we would pick 5-gallon pail after 5-gallon pail of wild blueberries up there. And he would make blueberry stuff throughout the winter. He had them all stored in his coolers.
Yum. Sounds
thanks,
good.
Jim. Hey, Jim, thanks for the call. Have a great weekend. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number.
That's a little fascinating, right? The apples without sugar.
It must have been extremely sweet apples that were extremely dry.
Yeah, I know. But
what, the dryness makes them sweeter?
Well, no. That to me, that actually seems almost contradictory. But to make a pie that worked without adding sugar, which gives you a liquid and draws out the sweetness of the apples, and then without having to add thickener, they must have been dry, but they also must have been sweet. So I'm really curious of what varietal of apple he would,
and how it would
slice up, put into a crust, and just bake.
And how it would hold together. Because what I imagine is this crust with a million apples just sliding around, right, in it.
Maybe he used pawpaws.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously. I'm going to look up pawpaws after the show.
You're going to start calling your next child pawpaw.
No more children. Thank you. But thank you for that. Bruce Weinstein, Mark Scarborough are here. All-time favorite sheet cakes and slab pies, the book, page 39. Looks good. M&M white cake with cream cheese frosting and Gorp. What is Gorp?
Good old raisins and peanuts.
Oh, really?
G-O-R-P. Good old raisins.
Did you ever take a car trip as a kid in the 60s? And have Gorp in the front seat.
Just a bag of raisins, salty peanuts, and sweet, chewy raisins.
In the 70s, they had Winston's, but they didn't have Gorp.
They taste good, like a cigarette chip.
This is pretty sweet, though, right? Did you guys ever go into a coma when you're running these books?
Well, no, not really.
No, but we do renew our gym membership every time we get a new contract.
You know, I have a theory that bourbon counteracts all this.
You might be right, but that's another program. Yeah. Bruce Weinstein, Mark Scarborough here. The number is 800-348-2551. Loretta in Athens. Loretta, you're on.
Hi, how are you guys today?
Good.
I'm calling, actually, today, it's 1 year ago today that my dad died, and he's very much on my mind today, and this show really tied in well with it, because he used to make what he called an apple cake, but it wasn't a cake as I would understand a cake. He would make a layer of dough in probably what was a cookie sheet at the time, and then cut up the apples and such, but he cooked like his mother did, that is, without a recipe.
Yeah.
So I have no recipe for something like that, even though I'd be interested in creating it. And I was wondering, first of all, if something like that was in your cookbook.
All right, so maybe you'd have to describe it a little more.
Well, I can't tell you that it sounds like there was a crust with apples. It's sounding a little like that other guy's apple pie there with just a crust and apples. But we do have an apple cake recipe in this book, which is something that it was inspired by something my grandmother used to make. And she would cut up apples into big chunks and then put a little bit of sugar on them and let them macerate for a bit so that the liquid came out of the apples and it became very wet. And then into that, we mix flour and baking powder and oil. You could use melted butter if you wanted to make it a little more European. But she was kosher, and so if she was serving that after a meat meal, she used oil. And then it just bakes into this sort of very light, tender cake with giant chunks of apples with almost just enough cake to hold the apples together.
Well, but see, I guess my dad would make sort of a crust first.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And I don't recall whether he partially baked it or baked it first, because there was no juiciness to it, really. I think he was just sort of sugar and cinnamon the apples, mm-hmm. maybe. I don't know if there was any little flour on there, but it wasn't a moist, it was just apples on top with the crust underneath.
Oh, nice. It does. It sounds a lot like that other guy's pie.
It's back to that problem, you know, about apples are so funky because there's so many varietals, and the varietals act so differently in cooking. In fact, anytime we write a recipe with apples, I'm always slightly hesitant, right? Because pippins and spies, and they don't act the same.
And
macoons,
russets, and they're all different.
Yeah, they don't. And russets, if you want to try this, you might consider making a pie crust and then use a russet.
Russet a potato?
Well, no, they're called golden russets.
Ah.
There's also Roxbury russets. They're called that because the skin of the apple is rough like a russet potato.
Yeah. And there's a lot of russets out right now around us, and they're dry, more sour apples, and that might work somehow.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. The other thing I was wondering about is growing up in Philadelphia, there were not many, but a few German bakeries in the area that would make this Philadelphia, I think it was somewhat often called a Philadelphia German butter cake.
Mm.
And again, it had this crust in the pan, but then the center of it, I think, was pretty much like butter and confection. I mean, cholesterol in a pan.
Oh, my grandmother made that too.
Incredibly good.
And now imagine that in an 18 by 13 inch pan.
I mean, I know there's that thing from the Midwest called gooey butter cake, but I think that's a different thing, right? That, because that gooey butter cake is like a box cake mix plus a melted pound of butter.
Really?
And then,
oh goodness, yeah, that is a little different.
That caught my
attention. This would be a big open sheet, and it'd be a little jiggly in the center, set up. But I mean, when family came out from the Midwest, they would take these home in boxes, or we'd have to have it while they were there. But a really rich but marvelous dessert.
Fabulous.
Fantastic. Hey, Loretta, thank you so much for the call. Have a great weekend. Our number is 800-348-2551. It is Food Friday. Mark Scarborough and Bruce Weinstein here. The new book, all-time favorite sheet cakes and slab pies. Easy to make, easy to serve. More calls coming up.
Support for WAMZ comes from Berkshire Country Day, an independent pre-K to 9 school with a comprehensive, challenging curriculum serving families in the Berkshires and Columbia County. Open house November 7th, intentional, independent, inspired. BerkshireCountryDay.org. Convino Wine Bar, Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 70 wines by the glass and a full menu from afternoon snack through nightcap. Live music Sundays and Mondays. Thorns Marketplace, ConvinoWineBar.com. Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasonings, Sheffield, Massachusetts. Now crafting black garlic and black garlic products in small batches. BlackGarlicSeaSalt.com for more information. Cooperstown Farmers Market, in its 27th year, bringing farmers and artisans together to provide local goods. Open every Saturday year-round, CooperstownFarmersMarket.org. And New York Presbyterian Hudson Valley Hospital, offering treatments for heart disease, including care from Columbia doctors, nyp.org/HudsonValley-cardiac to find a cardiologist.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC Food Friday with Ray Graff and you at 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough, who have written 30 books in 16 years. The newest is Sheet Cakes and Slab Pies. And I would imagine you have no time in your schedule, and yet, Bruce, you're singing a gig this weekend.
Well, yeah, I sing with a Baroque ensemble called Crescendo, and we have a concert in Great Barrington tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock at St. James Place. We're doing Bach and Telemann. And the nice thing is I created a recipe, which I bake in a sheet pan, which I cut into bars just for this concert, and we're serving them afterwards.
Oh, so how about that?
And we're calling them chocolate almond crescendi. Uh-huh. And so it's a brown sugar shortbread crust covered in a fudgy chocolate topping and chopped salted almonds.
Oh, that sounds great.
So you come here and sing, and then you'll get to taste a chocolate almond crescendi tomorrow night.
And how do people find out more about that?
You go to the Crescendo website, which is worldclassmusic.org, and you can find out about it to come hear us.
Well, that's terrific. All right, so that is tomorrow night. in Great Barrington, St. James?
St. James Place, yeah.
Okay, very good. 800-348-2551, the number. And back to the phones we go. Stacy in Lenox, Mass. Stacy, you're on.
Hi. I love the show. And the topic I would like to address is classic coconut cake. Mm. But the thing is that I know the New York Times had a recipe recently. I'm at the age where I used to be vegan. So I used to, like, bake tofu chocolate pudding cakes and follow, you know, a lot of alternative baking styles. Is there a way to make, first of all, what's your favorite gluten-free flour to use? And you know a way to make a gluten-free coconut layered cake without so much sugar?
I have never...
Like, not too sweet and no buttercream?
Yeah. I make a coconut cake that I love without a buttercream, and I make a 7-minute frosting, which is a meringue-based frosting for it. I have never made one that's gluten-free. I know a lot of people swear by, you know, different brands' gluten-free baking mixes.
Right.
And, you know, some people tell me they just substitute that for flour. I've never tried that. So when I do a particular gluten-free cake, it's for a reason that I want that texture. Like if I'm doing some kind of an almond cake where I want the ground almonds as the texture instead of flour, I'll do that. But in terms of translating a standard coconut cake recipe into gluten-free, it's a little difficult to just say that on the top of my head how I would do
that. Part of the problem is that coconut... Part of the problem is that coconut flour is funky. It's not... Almond flour is easier to work with in cakes and gluten-free recipes, but if you're going to make a coconut cake, then you're going to start to use coconut flour, right? And that's a little funky to work with.
What do you mean funky?
It doesn't have the same adhesive properties, so it's sometimes hard to get it to rise. It can be extremely flat and dense.
It's okay to substitute, you know, a third of your flour for a coconut flour, and that'll give you a little denser texture and more coconut flavor, but you can't just substitute all of it.
So I guess maybe it's a philosophical thing. In other words, you don't want to try to directly translate the texture and taste, but come up with something that is also good.
That's right.
That is similar.
I mean, there are gluten...
Okay, so which book is... Okay, I'll just tell you that I used to use, because I'm not celiac, I'm just like, you know, I had a gluten allergy and learned, you know, like diagnosed 2005. And, you know, once you deal with it, you learn how to eat low gluten and not have rashes. So I used to use barley flour, and then I would use some unbleached white flour and, you know, throw in eggs and just make it. I learned how to make my cakes the way I like them.
Good.
But which book would I find the coconut cake that you mentioned with the meringue frosting?
Oh, I believe that's in our book, The Ultimate Cookbook.
Yes, it is.
There's a recipe for coconut. Yeah, The Ultimate Cookbook.
Yes, it is. And I think there may also be a recipe for a different kind of coconut cake, but a coconut cake in our book that got the James Beard, the Vegetarian Dinner Parties.
Oh, there you go.
I believe it's there, too.
Well, Stacy, thanks a lot for the call, and have a great weekend. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. Lori in East Greenbush is next. Lori.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm enjoying the show. Listen every week, and it's great to get a chance to call in.
Thank you.
I was inspired by Margo's funny call before about the, what was it, the wacky cake, because I have that same recipe from my grandmother. And I also wondered if you had heard of some of the other crazy, there's a tomato soup cake that's like a spice cake.
Yeah.
No, I have heard of that, where you put a can of tomato soup in the cake batter.
I grew up in the South.
Have you guys made that?
I mean, my grandmother used to make tomato soup cake. I haven't made one since I was a kid. Oh, my gosh.
But it's a spice cake. I don't make these traditionally very often. And there was one that used sauerkraut instead of it, and it came out tasting like coconut.
What?
Actually, I could believe that. Because I know that, look, a carrot cakes work, and you can also make cakes with shredded zucchini, like a zucchini. So why not sauerkraut?
Why
I mean,
not?
It's a taste. Texture would be great. It's the flavor I think I have a problem with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
it does sound
kind
of weird. And then the
might
other
as well
one
do a
that
kimchi cake.
Was there was some sort of a mock apple pie made with
the crackers, with Ritz crackers.
Hello, I've made that pie.
Yeah.
That is one pie that I have made.
And you say you don't know how to cook.
I've made two of these in my life, and they taste like apple pies. It's amazing.
Well,
it comes out good. I hear these are good. I just hadn't tried all of them. But it was interesting. When Margo said that, it just sent me thinking of all these strange recipes from the past that
maybe
I have.
Maybe we'll have to do a whole show on that sometime, Lori. Strange recipes.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
Well, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. Yes, the Ritz mock apple pie is very good.
Yeah, the recipe is always on the back of the Cracker Box.
And I think that's another one that goes back to one of the World Wars where...
Well, apples weren't available.
Yeah.
That's a recipe that went back to a PR agency.
It was delicious.
That went back to the Ritz
Cracker. I challenge you two snobs to make one.
Well, next time we come in, I'll bring you
one. You don't have to bring it. Just try it. I don't want it. I do like that. Daisy in Holyoke is on. Daisy, you're on.
Hi. I just wanted to talk about this apple pie without sugar and cinnamon.
Sure.
Okay.
What I do, I don't try to pick dry apples. I just chop up coarsely, very coarsely, apples and put them in a pan with 1 tablespoon of water. And then I cook them very, very slowly on the lowest setting until they cook down into a chunky, thick applesauce. Mm-hmm. And then I put that right in the pie crust.
Sure.
And then I can add cinnamon if I want, but you know, the flavor is so good.
Daisy,
and
I think
it's not watery.
It sounds great, and it's not watery because you're reducing those apples down. You're cooking the water out of them in the pan.
Exactly.
And basically what it sounds like you're doing is, by the time you then bake that in a crust, you're almost doing an apple butter inside of a flaky crust, and that sounds fantastic.
Right, and it's very chunky, and if you want to, you can put like a pinwheel of fresh apple slices on the top.
Sure. It sounds like a great idea.
A little more texture. And it really tastes like heaven, and it just doesn't need any flavoring.
Yeah, you're cooking it down and making a lovely like apple butter. That's a wonderful
idea. But you're cooking it at a very low temperature.
Yeah. Because you don't want it to burn.
The flavor. Right.
Well, Daisy, thanks for the call.
Yeah.
Bye now. 800-348-2551 on Vox Pop Food Friday. Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough are here. And the book, it's a cracking good book, all-time favorite sheet cakes and slab pies. It's out now. You may have seen them on QVC if you watch that sort of thing. Elizabeth in Albany. Elizabeth, you're on.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call, and it's been a very interesting program. I just wanted to let you know that I have a family who doesn't want to have sugar in their diet, not because they're diabetic, just because it's an unhealthy ingredient. And for years, I have made apple pies and baked apples simply by using a mixture of apples, Cortland's and McIntosh and McCowan's. I would mix up the apples, cut them up, put them in the pie crust, and I would put lemon juice, a sprinkle of lemon juice over it, cinnamon, and no sugar. And people would say to me, well, you mean no sugar? Because guests would ask, well, how much sugar did you use? And I'd say, no sugar. And they couldn't believe it. But, yeah, you don't have to cook with sugar in order to have sweetness. You just improvise.
Yeah.
And I improvised by using a little bit of lemon and cinnamon, and that was it. And it would be sweet.
Yeah, well, the lemon juice, Zach, the sourness of the lemon, just as if you also would put a pinch of salt, actually brings out the sweetness of the apples.
That would be
delicious. What sugar does add, though, besides sweetness, it adds body and texture. So you're going to have a different kind of a texture in a pie baked without any sugar. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with doing it without sugar. It's just going to be a slightly different kind of dessert. And you're right. It's absolutely perfect, but it's a different kind of pie. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. But it is possible for people to cook without sugar.
Sure.
That's the point of my call.
Well, thanks, Elizabeth. We appreciate the call. And it is Vox Pop, page 161 of the new book, Jack and Coke Fudge Pie. Really? Really?
Why not, right?
All right, tell me about that one.
Well, why not just take a little bit of Jack Daniels, you add it to the chocolate, you make this really intense chocolate.
That has Coke in it. So you make a little Coca-Cola in the chocolate fudge, and then I thought, well, let's thin this out with a little bourbon, bake it in a flaky crust, and what is not to like about
genius.
That?
Yeah,
thank
genius.
Well, wouldn't
thank
be good,
you.
Right?
Well, that's worth the price of admission right there. This one came in via email from Jeremy. Have you ever made a vinegar chocolate cake? I think we discussed that.
Yeah, that's the same. That's like that crazy cake where you add vinegar and oil and baking soda.
Right. And as we said in our book, The Ultimate Cookbook, there's a loaf cake that's a chocolate vinegar cake that's made in a bread loaf.
We don't do it the way Margot did, by poking holes in our dry ingredient.
No.
Because in the end, when you pour all that stuff on it, doesn't matter if they're in holes or just go in the bowl.
Right.
But we have a similar style cake that we call a chocolate tea loaf.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You know, I'm still interested in the caller who talked about the sauerkraut cake.
Yeah, that's really crazy, right? It kind of flipped me for a minute because I couldn't figure it out. Because here's why. I actually believe there is never enough vinegar in anything in life. And so, you know, I'm the sour pickle guy and all that stuff. So I'm still kind of trying to figure it out what you would do with sauerkraut.
Well, you slice up Frank's and you put that right in the cake.
Well, but remember, sauerkraut is not a vinegar thing. It's salt. It's fermented. So you have acidity from lacto fermented. It's sour.
I mean,
still think a texture would be fantastic. I'm just concerned.
I mean, I have seen recipes for kimchi brownies. So I have seen people, it's the same thing, right? It's fermented cabbage, except in that case, it's hot. Listen, brownies with a little bit of heat, a little cayenne is a fabulous thing.
New rule, if you bring up kimchi brownies again, the show's over, all right? So let's go back to the phones and Tobias and Rifton. Tobias, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. I just wanted to follow up. You had a woman on before who was thinking of her father on the first anniversary of his death. She was talking about an apple cake, but actually what she described is, I'm almost positive, the same thing that my mom has always made. It's actually an apple square.
Okay.
It's more of a shortbread bottom, and it's just butter, sugar, flour, egg, mix it all together as little as possible, press it into a 9x10x12-inch pan, slice your favorite apples on top, cinnamon and sugar, and bake it at 400 degrees. She was calling. She was looking for what it is. So she wants to search apple squares. That's what she was looking for.
Sounds
not
lovely.
An apple cake. That
sounds like a really great idea to make a really nice shortbread, right?
And then just
and
bake
apple
slices on top.
On top of it.
Yum. Yum.
Let's go over to Diane in Palinville. Diane, you're on.
Oh, hi. I think this recipe is kind of similar to a few others that I've heard, but this was from a neighbor of mine that was in her late 90s. And she talked about being able to make this cake in the winter because you needed no eggs or no milk. And it's a chocolate cake. And that when it's the three holes, it's sugar, flour, soda, salt, and then you cocoa, and then you pour the vinegar. But anyway, it's moist, it's delicious. And she used to say they could leave Catskill in the horse and buggy and she'd have it made by the time they got to the house.
Wow. That's very cool.
It is moist, it's rich. And it's easy, and yes, you need no eggs or butter.
Yeah, another version of those crazy cakes, another version of that chocolate tea loaf.
Yes.
Do you know, it wasn't until I moved up here, up to the north from the south, that I knew that chickens quit laying. I didn't, in the south, they don't quit laying.
I didn't know that.
Not
because
necessarily.
The sun's up a lot longer down there.
And it's warmer, and my grandmother's chickens laid all year long. They slowed up in the winter.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But they didn't quit.
Up here, they quit.
Oh yeah.
We can't get our local eggs in the winter.
I didn't know that. All right. Well, and you learn something new every day. Diane, thank you for the call. Let's go over to Rachel in Slingerlands. Rachel, you're on.
Thank you. I want to make a pie crust without using wheat flour. Could I use rice flour instead?
It's going to give you a completely different texture. You can't use rice flour alone and come up with anything that would even resemble the kind of pie crust you're talking about.
But you can use an equal parts white rice flour and almond flour. As I recall, that equal parts of that will work in a pie crust. Now, it's not going to be the same. It's not going to be crunchy with thousands of layers of pastry in it. But as I recall, equal parts almond flour and white rice flour will work. Does that sound right?
I'm
running it by chef.
Yeah, there are lots of combinations for gluten-free crust recipes. I would probably, if I was doing one, I'd probably start playing around with some white rice flour, maybe some buckwheat flour, which has no gluten. I might put some oat flour into it as well.
Which is sticky.
And then I would always, no matter what combination of gluten-free flours I'm using, I always put a little cornstarch as well, because that helps bind it together too.
Mm. Right. Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Sure.
Hey, Rachel, thanks a lot for the call. Have a great weekend. And, well, I guess we have about a minute here. Maybe we'll take one more call. What's coming up for you guys?
Oh, well, I've got my concert tomorrow night.
That's right. Great Barrington.
Which I'm very excited about.
And what's the website again on that?
That is worldclassmusic.org. And the group is Crescendo. And we'll be doing all this Bach and Telemann and Schütz tomorrow night.
And we've just shot a series of videos for Aim Healthy You.
What is that?
Clean Eating Academy. We're doing a whole series
of
shortcut cooking that's healthy and clean eating.
What do you mean clean?
Clean as in
cleaning the kitchen before you cook?
No. It's chemical. Cut down the chemical signature of the restaurant.
Clean food. So it's healthier, cleaner food. And all that's at aimhealthyyou.com. Or you can go to our website, bruceandmark.com, and you can get links to all this stuff.
And you guys still got the blog going, right?
We do. It's our podcast, Cooking with Bruce and Mark.
Yeah, and how often do you do that?
Twice a week. Tuesdays,
really?
We help you avoid common cooking mistakes. And Fridays, we either cook through a recipe or, like we did today, Mark and I just had this great conversation about how difficult it is to get dinner on the table.
On most Fridays, we cook through a recipe, and it gets a little raucous.
Oh, really? How much editing do you have to do get the thing ready for
it? Actually, it's not that kind of editing, but it's I have fun doing it. I love editing.
Well, fair enough. Well, once again, the website is
bruceandmark.com.
Well, congratulations on the new book, All-Time Favorite Sheet Cakes and Slab Pies, easy to make, easy to serve. And where can we find this book?
Wherever fine books are sold, or online at Amazon, barnesandnoble.com, any of those places.
Great job, and good luck with the concert.
Thank you.
You have any solos?
No.
No, but you're bringing cake.
I am always bringing cake.
So you're the star of the show. Good job. Support comes from Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Dairy and No Moo Dairy Free, handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tastings, Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butterscratch bakery, caterer, and cafe, offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com. And River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar at a bakery, rivervalley.coop. Thanks again to Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough for being here today. Thank you for listening and for the great calls today. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Barb King took your calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Have a lovely weekend. Alan will be here on Monday for a Medical Monday. Right now, stand by for news.